Hey everyone, welcome back to episode 87 of the Guardian Project Podcast. I'm your host, Andy, and I'm here in search of greatness.
Oh, look at that. You're in the right place, Andy. You're definitely in the right place. And I'm your other host, Mike Coyle, and unlike football, fumbling with your hand isn't going to cost you the game, but it will cost you a few dollars. Some pretty expensive cards out there.
Yeah, there are.
Please listen carefully.
And this is the podcast where we talk about all things Magic the Gathering.
But mostly Commander.
So, Coyle, I know that if you were in our Discord, and I know that we've been messaging this past weekend, I had some of my first new cube lands arrive. So I'm getting new basics for my Ravnica cube. We've talked about it on the show before, and I decided to bite the bullet. I got a bonus at work, so things were pretty good recently, and I said, all right, I'm going to pick up some of those Ravnica weekend foil basics. Mm-hmm. So I have the Boros Mountains arrived, the Azorius Plains, and the Azorius Islands. I think, so I want to get 10 of each basic so that everybody will just use these in the draft, and I'll have them sleeved. They're just so expensive because of how like low the distribution was on them.
Right.
I think each shop got like 20 total. I'm pretty sure it was like one of each basic. So they would get like I guess two for each guild, right? So they'd have like the Boros Mountain and the Boros Plains, but it was like only one of each. So you got to compete that weekend in 2018. I think it was like over 3 days. And the problem is when I look online, like if I look on TCG or anything, most sellers only have like a copy.
Right.
It's like, oh, so I guess I'm going to buy one copy from 10 people and pay for crazy shipping. Yeah. So I was lucky and found a couple of sellers that had like 5 to 6 copies of some of these. Mm-hmm. But if anybody has some of these and you're looking to offload them, I will buy them.
So these are different than the cards that came in the guild packs, right? Or the guild kits.
Yeah, they're different than the guild. So the guild kit ones, I think it might be the same. It might be the same art, but the guild kits are non-foil.
Gotcha.
And these ones say Ravnica Weekend at the bottom, like the bottom left corner. They're really pretty. And I had found some folks at our LGS. This was before the pandemic and everything had hit last year when I was trying to start this project. And I think I traded for like 2 or 3 of the Selesnya planes. Mm-hmm. But again, if each shop only had like 20, you're not really going to find some big stock of them anywhere. It's entirely possible that some of them aren't listed or people just don't have them listed online. So I should probably call a couple places.
Yeah. There's no reason why you shouldn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
This last week, I actually, on our stream on Thursday, I got to take out, my Morophon Changelings deck for its first maiden voyage. Its first maiden voyage as you know,
it's only maiden voyage
as opposed to its second maiden voyage. Yeah, exactly.
It was good. It played really well.
Yeah. I was a little afraid that it wasn't going to like get to a point where I could do anything because I play a lot less ramp in this than I did in my previous Morophon deck. And I think I only got to 5 mana, honestly, in that game. But it did plenty of work at 5 mana. Turns out when you have a flying changeling and you throw a coat of arms down, it is going to scare some people out there.
So the partners that you ended up playing, the partners with cards, I forget their names. It's the ones that care about dragons and soldiers. Is that the...
Yeah, so Korvoth Brightflame is the dragon that cares about knights. And then Sylvia Brightspear is the knight that cares about dragons.
Mm-hmm.
So Sylvia would give all dragons double strike, and Korvoth gives all knights flying and haste. So if I would have them both out on the same time, all my changelings would have flying, haste, and double strike. I didn't have them both out at the same time, but I think both of them were definitely individually very, very good cards for the deck. I was very happy with those cards in the deck. And even Rin and Ciri Inseparable was super awesome too. So
we had to get rid of Rin and Ciri. And at one point, so Chase was on stream with us, Mana Curves, and she had so many Chandra's out, and Coyle's like, Andy, you need to get rid of these Chandra's. And I said, I don't know. The Chandra's aren't hurting me. They're hurting you. So I think I'm going to leave the Chandra's. But the Rin and Ciri, if I swung at you, you were like, all right, I'll just play another changeling and get a cat and a dog.
Yeah. It's pretty great.
No, that was really cool. So I'm excited to see more of the deck play. That night, actually, on stream, I got to check a box off of my to-do list or my my wish list for some of my commander decks. I played Togo and Art in the game that you played your Changeling. So mm-hmm. I was playing with a box of rocks. Mm-hmm. And I was able to kill both you and Proxy. So
that's right.
On Twitter, lab_proxy was playing with us. And I threw, I think, one rock at him at instant speed, or I guess at end of turn. And then I had out the Shikari that allows me to do equipment at instant speed. Mm-hmm. So I moved some things around and I threw a rock at you. And then I was able to take out the table after doing that. And I think chat really enjoyed me throwing rocks at people to take someone out, because I don't know if any of us were expecting a shock to do that.
No, I thought we were all dead to Chase, but she had to do what, like 10 damage to the board or something, and she just didn't have it in her hand.
And she just didn't draw it. She's like, I have a card in hand. I drew a card that's not going to do that. So yeah, no, that was a really fun game. Speaking of streams, I'm going to be playing this coming weekend. So on Friday night, I'm going to be playing with Mental Misplay, some CEDH again. And then on Saturday, I'll be playing with Moderately Anonymous MTG, who's been on our show before. I'll be playing some CEDH with them as well. So tune in and I'm sure you'll find it on Twitter. We'll be tweeting about it. If you want to see some more Lysolda shenanigans or some Malcolm and Vile Smasher, and I might be putting back together my Momir Vig Simic Visionary deck.
Nice.
So we'll see. I don't know. I've been told tutors are very stressful to play in CDH now with Opposition Agent, so mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I should do it, but I'm reading up to see if I should put it back together.
Okay. Yeah, I know in our Discord we've been getting a lot of chatter and people looking for games to play, some of these high power games, maybe not necessarily CEDH, but definitely high power games have been firing off much more frequently. Not really sure what spurred that on. Probably just some of the members in the community says, hey, I want to play some high powered stuff. So that's been cool to see. I haven't been able to get in there on that, but man, my Jessica Rogrock deck is just sitting and waiting to get some more games in, so I'll have to hop in on some of those games myself.
I got to play the other night with Andy Bentley, who many folks have seen in the community, and some of our patrons as well, to play some of those games. So I was able to play World Gorger Dragon with a Piranha Marsh, so I was able to get the combo off without having to have a creature to stop the combo, because it deals one damage to target or an opponent loses a life when Piranha Marsh comes in.
Nice.
So that was cool, but I think there were some Tashar decks, mono-white combo Tashar. There was a Winota combo deck that was Winota Stacks, and it was doing work with Rule of Law and Deafening Silence.
Oh, nice.
I need to cast two spells usually the turn that I combo off, because I don't want to throw World Gorger in the graveyard and then wait a turn.
Right.
So no, I need to cast two spells. Yeah. No, I've made that mistake before.
Yeah. Yeah, and on our stream this week, we're actually going to be joined by Zuby from Magic with Zuby podcast and Magic for Normies that he does every week, as long as the Queen of the Dredge herself, Erin Campbell from the Magic Mikes podcast, and everything else that she does, because she's super busy and she does a lot for our community. So very excited to have both of them on our stream this week on Thursday.
Yeah, they'll be on our stream this week on Thursday, and this has actually been a pretty good week for news and things that we've had going on. We've done a lot this past week, but we've also got a new Secret Lair. This is Secret Lair Black is Magic. So Wizards of the Coast is proud to celebrate Black History Month with Secret Lair Black is Magic, which celebrates and supports different expressions of Black identity. It's going to be available for pre-order from February 22nd through March 31st, with proceeds benefiting the game design, digital art, and game development programs of Black Girls Code, an organization that empowers girls of color in game design and other coding programs. So this product is celebrating Black history and honors the stories, culture, and achievements of Black people. And so Black Girls Code aims to increase the number of women of color in the digital space by empowering girls of color between ages 7 and 17 to become innovators in STEM fields, leaders in their communities, and builders of their own futures through exposure to computer science and technology. So this will be dropping in the next month. And we know two cards from it. We've got Shalai, Voice of Plenty, and Ponder. So far, And we're going to get 5 more additional borderless alternate art cards that will be revealed real soon. It says to check back between February 9th and 16th for more info on Secret Lair Black is Magic.
Yeah, this is super cool, obviously, for all of the obvious reasons, but I guess this kind of personally hits home with me a lot. As some of you may know, our listeners out there, Andy, I know you do, I am involved in FIRST Robotics at the high school level, and you know, it's always a huge push to push for the STEM field and everything, and inclusion of people of color, women, any of the people that may have been marginalized in these STEM fields, and giving them a better opportunity for this. So this is very, very cool to me, and I look forward to seeing the rest of these cards and supporting this.
Yeah. So it'll be available in foil and non-foil. Foil will be $49.99 and non-foil will be $39.99. And those will be going on sale towards the end of this month.
Yeah. And then one last thing, one last little piece of, I don't know if you want to call it news or just something really cool that kind of came out of the woodwork this last week, is some of these call time boxes with known serial numbers ended up being these what are called God boxes, something that we saw back in the original Theros block into Journey into Nyx.
Journey into Nyx had some of those in the pre-release kits where you would open it and you'd have 15 gods in one pack.
Yeah, so I guess these are a little bit different, where it's a booster box where every single pack has like an alternate art god in them, every single pack in the booster box. So we've seen some YouTube videos of people opening these boxes, so they do seem legit. And there's a lot more than just one person who has them. So it's kind of cool to see, to check out. I don't know the rarity of them. I assume they're going to be pretty rare. But so, yeah, it's kind of cool to see that that is back for call time.
Yeah, no, I'm that, you know, listen, I looked at my boxes and the serial codes and they're not even close. It appears that these boxes were printed specifically in the US. So that is what is unique to these. So they wouldn't be printed in Europe or any other from any other distribution center. So if you find one of those, that's wonderful. And before we continue, though, we want to thank all of our patrons. Really appreciate all of your support. And if you want to support us, you can head to patreon.com/guardianprojectpod and donate at any dollar amount. We've got lots of fun goodies. And again, we're working on some new swag and giveaway this year. So we would love if you would check that out.
Yeah. Other ways you can support the podcast, whatever you're listening to the podcast on currently, if you could drop a like, subscribe, maybe a comment, anything that you think that we should be doing as a podcast that you're looking for, or as a consumer of the podcast that we can change or do differently, we would really, really appreciate the feedback. Subscribe, rate, review, hit that bell icon if you're listening on YouTube so that you can get updates on whenever we upload new YouTube videos, where you can also find our VODs from Twitch uploaded to YouTube weekly.
Every Sunday. Coyle, what are we talking about this week?
This week, in honor of this awesome football game, if you're into football, that happened over the past weekend, instead of talking about the Super Bowl, I thought maybe we could look at a deck tech where we talk about a superb owl. And that is a deck tech for Vega the Watcher. This is going to be actually my first Azorius deck that I've ever built. And I don't know why I didn't think of it to begin with when I started putting a deck list together. I went, Why aren't I talking to Andy, the Azorius? I don't know. What is like a leader in the Azorius guild
aficionado?
Called? Okay. This Azorius aficionado. Why am I not talking to him about how to build this deck? So I thought it would be cool in honor of the Super Bowl to go over a superb owl deck tech. And yeah, that's what we're going to do today.
That's what we're going to do. All right, Coyle. It's a football term. You ready to kick this off?
Oh, absolutely.
That was great. So you wanted to talk about a superb owl this week.
That's right. Now, although owl is not a creature type in Magic, I think we all know that Vega the Watcher is totally an owl, right? You can't mistake that as not an owl.
It's definitely an owl.
So yeah, I wanted to talk about Vega the Watcher. So I guess best place to start is explaining what Vega the Watcher is and what Vega the Watcher does. So Vega the Watcher is 3 converted mana cost, 2/2 bird spirit. So for 1, a white and a blue. Again, flying bird spirit 2/2. It says whenever you cast a spell from anywhere other than your hand, draw a card. And that's yes. all Vega says. So it's just drawing cards. Best part about Magic the Gathering, right, Andy?
It's the best thing you can do in the best colors you can play.
Well,
I mean, to be fair though, I'm coming on to some new colors now, and but I still hold this one, you know, near and dear. So I'm very excited that you built your first Azorius deck here.
Yeah, and in fact, just on that new color topic, the 2 new decks that I'm hoping to have for this Thursday stream are 4 unique colors, two decks of 2 colors, and none of them are black. So, you know, me too, Andy, coming into some new colors myself.
Yeah. So Vega wants us to play with cards or to cast cards in places other than from your hand. Obviously, you can draw some cards.
Right.
So there's like a lot of mechanics that work really well with Vega. And when you post the deck list, when we share it after our stream, you've got it nice and organized here and separated out specifically by a mechanic that works really well. So why don't we talk about some of these mechanics that work well and maybe a couple of the cards that we want to run of each?
Sure. So Vega, you know, being printed in the Kaldheim set is, you know, is pretty much the wording on Vega is probably most synergistic with a brand new keyword that we got in Kaldheim, and that's foretell. And foretell is a mechanic where you can, you know, pay some mana up front on a card in order to make it cost less later on, in order to like put it face down somewhere, you know, put your trap, your Yu-Gi-Oh trap card on the battlefield as you foretell it. And as you cast the card from foretell, you actually are casting it from exile, which will be triggering Vega's ability to draw a card. So foretell is the mechanic that Wizards of the Coast had in mind in a sealed environment, a draft environment, that kind of thing. And it's going to be actually one that's a little bit underutilized, I think, in this deck, just because it's the first time we see the mechanic, where some of these other mechanics we're going to talk about, we've seen in multiple sets.
Yeah. One of my intros just from the other week you're using here, saw it coming. You've got a counterspell of foretell.
Absolutely.
I'm here for it. Absolutely. But you've also got a board wipe, which is really great. You've got Doomscar, so you can destroy all creatures with foretell for 3. So you've got your board wipe. That's also going to draw you a card. Now, I guess I'm curious if that will be actually used with Vega, or if you have a way or think about in the future of giving Vega indestructible or something.
You know, we've talked about Doomscar a little bit just as a sidebar. And, you know, if you're playing Wrath of God for 4 mana and, you know, someone's going to have a big board state, sometimes it's not going to be worth it for me to, you know, oh, I really want to keep my commander. I don't want to deal with Andy's 54 locusts that he has on his side of the battlefield. No, I'm gonna Doomscar.
Yeah, Doomscar.
And if I can draw one card and board wipe for, you know, it, technically it's gonna cost 1 more mana in order to, you know, foretell it and then cast it for its foretell cost for a total mana of 5. But the turn that I cast it for 3 mana, it's gonna feel like I got a good deal on a Wrath of God. So I'm totally okay. Totally okay with that. I am probably most excited for like Elrond's Epiphany, just to get an extra turn. So create 2/1/1 bluebird creature tokens with flying, take an extra turn after this one and exile Elrond's Epiphany. We're just gonna throw on the extra wording of also you get to draw a card from that, which is cool.
Also you get to draw a card. Yeah. Foretell remains to be seen if it is going to be a very popular mechanic that is played in Commander. However, Vega the Watcher obviously is not the only commander that cares about cards from Exile. The new Azorius commander specifically cares about foretell. But another mechanic that you're playing with here, which I think you have the most of, which makes sense. Mm-hmm. Very popular mechanic, been around for a very long time, is Flashback.
Yeah.
So you've got, as of right now, we've got, you know, about, you know, this is not a fully fleshed out list, right? We're still cutting, correct?
That is correct. We are still cutting, maybe even adding at this point as well.
There are 25 flashback cards on the potential chopping block. But flashback's really great because you can cast the card for the first time from your hand, and then flashback says you may play this card from your graveyard for its flashback cost and then remove it from the game. So you've got quite a few cards here, some of them very strong, you know, some that call out to me specifically. Divine Reckoning: each player chooses a creature they control, destroy the rest with flashback of 7. So you can choose Vega when we get further into your list and your strategy of how you're playing. Divine Reckoning is probably a pretty strong card in your Vega deck.
Yeah, for sure. There's actually, so I opened a lot of these Savine pre-cons because I was able to get them for a pretty cheap price, and I knew Dockside Extortionist was inside of them. So I actually had a bunch of these cards from the Savine deck that are going to do well. Savine did care about flashing cards back from your graveyard. So the card you mentioned, plus Savine's Reclamation and Prismatic Strands. A lot of these cards that I put in this list, I literally only put in this list, though, because it said flashback. So there's going to be some cards in this list that we're going to cut. Like in here, I had Alter Reality, which is an instant that says change the text of target permanent or spell by replacing all instances of one color word with another. That one would be a very situational card. Maybe someone casts, somebody says destroy target non-black creature and they target my Vega and I change the wording into it to say a non-blue creature and then it fizzles or something like that. That would be like the only instance. This card is definitely top on the chopping block, but you know, flashback is interesting. I know you said that sometimes you're going to have the ability to cast it from your hand and then cast it from your graveyard later, so you get to cast them twice and get the abilities. Sometimes the flashback cost is actually less when it's in your graveyard, so I was thinking about potentially building into this mechanic and building kind of a self-mill strategy as well, so I can only cast the cards for their flashback costs at some point. I know like a card like Deep Analysis, a lot of people like to play. 4-mana sorcery, target player draws 2 cards, or you can flash it back for 1 and a blue and pay 3 life. So then target player draws 2 cards. So, you know, casting it from my graveyard, it's going to be paying 2, pay 3 life, and draw 3 cards instead, which is super, super, super good.
And you've got, I mean, just looking through some of this list, like the card Chill of Foreboding is really interesting. A card that I probably would not have thought about had I not seen this much flashback in your deck. But you've got other mechanics, obviously, that care or that may care about things being in your graveyard. But Chill of Foreboding says each player puts the top 5 cards of their library into their graveyard, and then it also has flashback. So if you mill 4 flashback cards, you milled other people, but you can potentially just increase the size of your hand, right? And your options.
Exactly. And
it has tacked on draw a card if you did it from your graveyard.
That's right. That's right. And you know, on top of that, we're going to talk about some synergistic cards later. It could also help you kind of filter the top of your library in case, I don't know, you're playing a card that helps you cast cards from the top of your library, which is not your hand.
Which is not your hand.
Yeah. So the next mechanic that is going to work for us and that we're going to play at least a couple cards from is Cascade. So Cascade, when you cast a card with Cascade, you exile cards from the top of your library until you exile a non-land card with converted mana cost less than the card with Cascade that you cast. And then you may cast that card, and you are casting it from exile and not from your hand. So that is also going to trigger your Vega. However, Cascade is not, there's not a lot of cards with Cascade in blue-white. So currently I have Ardent Plea, which is an enchantment with Exalted. So it'll allow a creature that attacks alone to get +1/+1 until end of turn and has Cascade. So it's pretty much in here to just have Cascade. There's not really many instances where my 2/2 flying owl swinging in instead for 3 is really going to make that much of a difference. Maybe it will one day. I'm not really sure. And then Stormcaller's Boon is an enchantment that you can sacrifice Stormcaller's Boon to have creatures you control gain flying until end of turn, which, again, probably not going to do a whole lot for the deck, and again, is really only in there for Cascade. But the other card in here, Forceful Denial, from Commander Legends, being a 5-mana counterspell with Cascade, I think is going to be the best Cascade card for the deck. Gives us, you know, some playability, some counterspells. It's always nice to have a few counterspells. I don't want to just be running counterspell. In fact, I think there's 3 counterspells in this list, and they're all going to have synergies with Vega in order to get some card draw from it. So Definitely an easy include there, and Cascade being an interesting mechanic you can throw in here.
It's a mechanic that every time I see it played, I always go, oh, is that how that resolves? I've never used Cascade, but I've seen it, and I've been playing against that new Simic Cascade commander, and every time I see it come out, I go, oh gosh, all right, here we go. We're starting again.
That's right.
So the next mechanic you have here is a mechanic that it's still in Standard. It's Escape. So one of our... highlighted cards here from that specific mechanic and from the set itself is Elspeth, Sun's Nemesis. You've got a Planeswalker here. Escape allows you to exile other cards from your graveyard, and then you can cast the card for your graveyard by exiling some cards and paying that escape cost. So Elspeth is a Planeswalker that can make some humans, gain you some life, make some creatures larger. But again, we've got more synergy here with the graveyard. You're playing Sweet Oblivion. Target player mills 4, and then it has Escape for 4. Exile 4 other cards from your graveyard. You can cast it. I really like Escape as a mechanic. I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about it. I don't see it that often in Commander, but in this deck, I think that it could do some fun things.
Yeah, it's the one part I really, really like in the Vega deck with Escape is the fact that it doesn't, like with Flashback, when you flashback a card from your graveyard, once you've cast it for its flashback cost, you exile it. And with Escape, you don't do that. So you can potentially cast your cards with Escape multiple times from your graveyard over and over and continuing to get value. So specifically with Sweet Oblivion, if you do have the ability to, I don't know, have infinite mana somehow, I don't in this deck, but if you do, you could continually mill your entire deck with Sweet Oblivion because you mill yourself for 4, exile those 4 to cast Sweet Oblivion again, and so on and so forth. Maybe you do that until you get the flashback card you need into your graveyard or something. Then you keep drawing cards from it too. And I know it's not next in our list, Andy, but I'm going to jump to it just because of how similar it is. Another mechanic that I really, really like in this, and it's very underwhelming in blue-white colors, but it exists, is Retrace. And Retrace is going to be another way that we can continuously cast our spells from our graveyard. So Retrace is a mechanic that says you can cast this card from your graveyard by discarding a land card in addition to paying its other costs. So if we keep drawing cards and we keep, you know, flooding ourselves with lands in our hands, these Retrace cards are going to have give us the ability to discard them in order to cast these cards, which could also be fueling our graveyard to have cards to exile to our escape mechanics and stuff. But we're not going to have to exile cards from our graveyard for this. So this is going to be more about hand filtering rather than graveyard filtering. And it actually is my favorite card in the deck is a Retrace card, and that's Una's Grace. So for 2 and a blue, you get an instant that says target player draws a card, and it has Retrace. In Vega, it says target player draws 2 cards, which I really, really like. So, it's me. I draw 2 cards, not target player. It's just me.
Okay, fair enough. Retrace is something that I don't see very often. But with cards being in your graveyard here, we've got another mechanic that does work really well from your graveyard, which is Jumpstart. So I almost never see Jumpstart cards except for Quasi Duplicate, which is the card that I'm going to start with. You create a token that's a copy of target creature you control. Jumpstart, you may cast this card from your graveyard by discarding a card in addition to paying its other costs. Then you exile it. So, you know, make a token and then make another one by casting this for its Jumpstart cost from the graveyard. You also have got Radical Idea, Maximize Altitude, and Chemist's Insight. As we go further on, I do have some questions because I feel like, you know, you've got quite a few cantrippy things happening here, so it might be worth adding some Storm
blue
to this deck, depending on how many spells you're going to cast in a single turn.
Yeah, in fact, that quasi-duplicate card in there is probably going to be the least utilized, even given the fact that Maximum Altitude is one of the cards to give a creature flying, even though we have a flying creature. I think quasi-duplicate, with the amount of creatures that we're looking to build into this deck, I don't know if it's going to be high enough to make quasi-duplicate viable. So it might be one of the cards that gets cut, where Maximum Altitude, a card that maybe doesn't make sense, doesn't get cut. So the next keyword that we're going to look for here, and again, we're just going over keyword synergistic cards so far. There's going to be some stuff we talk after that, is one that was only printed in Eldraine so far. Hopefully we're going to see it again, and that is Adventure. So the Adventure cards, the Adventure mechanic, for those of you who don't know, there's two parts of an Adventure card. There's typically an instant or a sorcery. It has to be an instant or a sorcery on one side. And after you cast that, the card goes into this extra zone called the On an Adventure Zone. And it's not in, I think it's considered in exile, but at the same time, it's not considered. It's like its own zone. Either way, it's not in your hand. And you can cast the permanent side of that card from the adventure, and then trigger Vega's ability. When I was looking at the adventure cards, though, Andy, I was very underwhelmed by what I had available, and I chose so far not to actually include many of them. Looking at EDH rec for the Vega deck, I see Realm Cloaked Giant and Giant Killer as two of the cards that they play. So Realm Cloaked Giant being a 5 CMC destroy all non-giant creatures, which would destroy Vega, but then the creature side of it being a 7 mana, 7/7 Vigilance, which... honestly, not that thrilled about casting a 7 mana, 7/7 Vigilance in this deck. Doesn't really seem like it's... I mean, sure, I get to draw a card as well, but right. Don't love it. Giant Killer, maybe a little bit more. So a 3 mana instant says destroy target creature with power 4 or greater, and then it only costs me 1 mana to get out a 1/2 that can help me. I could pay 1 and a white and tap it to tap target creature. Maybe it prevents me from getting got by a Voltron strategy or something later on. But I guess the 1 mana to draw a card would be nice to have.
Yeah, you know, the two that I was thinking about Adventure, at least for the deck you're building, one is Brazen Borrower, because it's a bounce, and then you can flash in a 3/1 flying that then draws you a card. But the one that I do like is Hypnotic Sprite. So you've got a counter spell for a CMC 3 or less card, and then it's a 2/1 flyer. So, you know, just having those little tricksy things happening can be very valuable, we've found in Commander. Mm-hmm. return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand on the Brazen Borrower's petty theft side of that spell is really relevant in Commander. Returning one single non-land permanent to its owner's hand, you know, if they have some giant creature coming at you or something that when it deals damage, they're going to do something, you know, worth looking at, I think. But I agree... we'll probably see more Adventure in the future. I think it was a popular mechanic. I'd have to refer back to, you know, some articles that are written by Wizards on the actual player feedback or reception to these. But I agree. Not a ton, but there's certainly some worth looking at.
Definitely. Yeah, the Brazen Borrower is a really good point. I love bouncing people's tokens back to their hand into oblivion. Goodbye.
See ya.
So the next mechanic that we're going to talk about here is Suspend. So Suspend is an old mechanic that we saw in some Planar Chaos type of sets, I think.
It's been a minute. Yeah, I think we had Future Sight, I think, had... Okay. It might have been the first time we saw that, and then we got a couple of new ones in Modern Horizons.
Yeah, I was actually really... really excited. This is going to be the first deck that I play Mox Tantalite in. So it's the card has 0 converted mana cost, but you can't cast it for 0. You can suspend it for 3. You could pay 0 to suspend it for 3 turns. So maybe I should explain what suspend is. So suspend, a suspend card will have its own casting cost as well as an alternate casting cost of suspend. So when you cast a card for its suspend cost, you put X amount of suspend counters on, depending on what the card tells you to do. And at each one of your upkeeps, you remove a suspend counter. I guess they're probably called time counters. But yeah, you remove a time counter at your upkeep, and then once the card has 0 time counters on it, you may cast the card, or you do cast the card at that time. So you do end up casting the card from exile with suspend, and there's some pretty cool stuff. So Max Tantalite being one of those is just going to be a mana rock, which isn't that exciting, but a mana rock that draws you a card and taps from 1 mana of any color is pretty cool. Ancestral Visions is very similar in the Mox Tantalite kind of thing, where it doesn't have a converted mana cost. You can only suspend it. Suspend 4 for 1 blue. Target player draws 3 cards. But I think the other 3 cards in this list here, Andy, these other 3 suspend cards that I put in here are going to be better because it's going to be reoccurring value. So Reality Strobe is a 4 blue sorcery that says return target permanent to its owner's hand, remove reality strobe from the game with three time counters on it. Or you can suspend it for two and a blue. So this card kind of like every three turns is going to be bouncing something and drawing me a card as long as I keep Vega out there. And I think that's really, really important. And then I know, Andy, I got the idea to use this Chronomantic Escape from you when you were building your Belborca deck back in the day.
So that's until your next turn, creatures can't attack you. Remove until your next turn, creatures can't attack you, and then remove Chromantic Escape from the game with three time counters on it. That's great.
Yeah, so it's every three turns. People have to be planning three turns ahead. Okay, three turns from now, I can't attack Coil because that spell is going to happen again. So I have to attack him these two turns, take a turn off, and then attack him two more turns after that. So I think it's going to be kind of cool for people to play around, maybe some politics kind of stuff. But this brand new card that we got in the Ikoria Commander set, I don't remember exactly which deck this came from. And I have not tried to pronounce this card in a very long time. So I think it's Apocrysite. Is a 1/1
Epocrysite. And this might have even been a reprint.
Oh, okay.
I think this card was also in one of the Commander anthologies
So Commander 2014, Modern Masters, Commander Anthology Volume 2, and Future Sight. So it was also a Future Sight card.
Yeah, Epocrysite. I've never played the card, I'll be honest.
No, me neither. But when I was searching in Scryfall for Suspend, this card came up because it does actually have Suspend in it. So it enters the battlefield with 3+1/+1 counters on it if you didn't cast it from your hand. And when Apocrysite dies, you exile it with 3 time counters on it and it gains Suspend. So could be a really good chump blocker on the ground. Potentially 4 power. When you first bring it out for 2 mana, it's only 1 power. But then it's going to draw you cards and be a good chump blocker on the ground for you. And I figured, a card that I don't need to cast from my hand is just constantly giving me card advantage every 3 turns is going to be really good to play in this deck.
Yeah, I agree. Another mechanic that you've got in here is Cypher, a mechanic that came out in the first set that I ever played. And I actually think it was only in 2 sets, to be honest, with a couple of reprints, but it is a mechanic that came out originally in Gatecrash. So it is a spell that says you may exile the spell encoded on a creature you control. Whenever that creature deals combat damage to a player, its controller may cast a copy of the encoded card without paying its mana cost. So can be, a little difficult to track if you are casting a Cypher card. But we are only obviously going to be playing the mono blue Cypher cards because it was the Dimir mechanic in the Return to Ravnica block. But there are some very unique cards, and it works really well, I think, with Vega, not only because Vega has flying, so Vega's likely going to be able to attack and maybe hit to cast these ciphered cards. But ciphered cards are not ones that you see very often. So last thoughts, it costs 4 for a sorcery to draw a card with Cypher. So anytime Vega, then attacks and deals damage, or any creature, doesn't have to just be Vega, you draw 2 cards.
That's right. So you will have to cast the card first, and then it ciphers onto the creature, and then maybe you're going to cast it that exact same turn. So it could draw 3 cards for 4 mana in 1 turn and force someone. The other thing about these cipher cards, you can treat them like auras or equipments and stuff, and if an opponent is afraid of them, it's going to draw some target removal, which is which is nice sometimes. The one cipher card that I have played with in a lot of decks is Stolen Identity. So that's a 4 blue-blue create a token that's a copy of target artifact or creature. And originally I wasn't going to add this into this deck, honestly, because I've only ever played Stolen Identity copying my own creatures. But it doesn't say it doesn't say a target artifact or creature you control. So you can start copying other people's creatures and stuff, taking their big stuff. So that's definitely something I'm going to be throwing in the deck now. There's some control aspects, parts too. Void Walk to exile target creature, return it to the battlefield under its owner's control at the beginning of the next end step. We're going to see some enter the battlefield, at least one enter the battlefield creature that I'm going to play in this deck that could take advantage of getting an extra trigger, as well as, you know, bouncing tokens back to people's hands. Oh, they're going to come back at the end step? No, they're not. They're gone forever. And removing stuff from being able to be blocked or something. I guess you have to deal damage for Cypher to trigger, so maybe that won't work. But I digress. There's a lot of cool little defensive mechanics in these Cypher cards. A total of 6 Cypher cards you can play in the deck. I think just for the flavor, probably going to end up playing all 6 of these cards in this deck. So cool stuff there. So the next card, which is one I have very, very underbuilt into for this mechanic on Vega, is Rebound. So Rebound, if a spell has Rebound, once you cast it at the beginning of the next turn, of your next turn, you get to cast it again. So specifically, if you cast a spell from your hand, exile it as it resolves. At the beginning of your next upkeep, you may cast this card from exile without paying its mana cost. So there aren't a ton of Rebound cards that I particularly love. Looking at EDH Rec for top cards, there's actually only one card with Rebound that shows up, and that is Emerge Unscathed. It says target creature you control gains protection from the color of your choice until end of turn. So this would be kind of a cool card to protect Vega in case someone tries to use target removal on it or something. But I think in terms of the Rebound mechanic, if we want to take advantage of it, we're going to have to play the creature Taigum, Ojutai Master. So for 2, a white and a blue, you get a 3/4 human monk that says instant sorcery and dragon spells you control can't be countered by spells or abilities, which is an awesome added effect for this deck. But it also says whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell from your hand, if Taigum, Ojutai Master attacked this turn, that spell gains Rebound. So having all of our spells have Rebound might make the Rebound mechanic a little bit better for us. You know, we're going to cast spells that we care about as well as those spells getting Rebound instead of, you know, just casting spells to draw cards, even though they're not really synergistic with what we want to do. The one thing you do have to look out for with having your cards have Rebound is they will exile once you cast them. So if it's a card that you would normally go like, oh, I want to cast my Deep Analysis for 4 and then cast it immediately again for 2. If it has Rebound, it gets exiled. So it's not going to be in your graveyard to flash it back right away. So maybe something you have to build around. Probably won't come up very much, but I might throw Taigum in here. I don't think there's many I don't know, Andy, if you had opportunity.
You could also play Cast Through Time, which is an enchantment that says instant and sorcery spells you control have Rebound. But you did point out there that, the spell actually just gets exiled as it resolves from your hand. So you're guaranteed to play it twice, but you're not going to be able to play it any more than, I guess, twice, right? Because you play it once and then it's going to cast again. But then you're not filling up your graveyard, which may or may not be a problem for you. But Cast Through Time's a pretty cool card. And then you're already playing with cards in your graveyard, so potentially playing with Profound Journey. So return target permanent card from your graveyard to the battlefield with Rebound is pretty cool. And then the last one would be just Reoccurring Insight. Draw cards equal to the number of cards in target opponent's hand. Could be relevant, but again, situational. But knowing how your deck is built and looking at the deck list, Taigum may be your best bet because you do need creatures. Right. And the added benefit of they can't be countered by spells or abilities is that's pretty neat.
Yeah, maybe there's a dragon I can find or I can throw in here just so that can't be countered too, just as a little bit extra flavor. Who knows? So the last mechanic that we have on this list is the mechanic that I'm the most underwhelmed about, even though it was a mechanic that is from the best set that's ever been printed for Magic the Gathering, Amonkhet. and that is the mechanic of Aftermath. So Amonkhet had these split cards where it's the first word and then the letter 2 and then the second word. And then you can cast the first half of the spell from your hand and the second half of the spell from your graveyard. So the two cards that are seen in the top cards in the Vega list are Commit to Memory, which would be to 4 mana instant to put target spell or non-land permanent into its owner's library, second from the top. And Memory, a 4 blue-blue sorcery with Aftermath, says each player shuffles his or her hand and graveyard into his or her library and then draws 7 cards. That particular spell I don't really like because when I cast memory, I'm going to draw one card and then shuffle my hand in. And I don't really think it makes that much sense to play. The commit part, I admit, is a very, very good spell to be able to tuck someone's card and then cast memory and make them shuffle everything is kind of cool. But I really like the failure to comply card. So failure is for one and a blue. It's an instant, says return target spell to its owner's hand. So it's a bounce. But it could also be for someone who has an instant or sorcery that's on the stack. You can return that to their hand. Or maybe you want to return your own spell to your hand or something like that if someone tries to counter it or whatnot. But then there's the comply as aftermath, a one for one white. You get a sorcery that says choose a card name. Until your next turn, your opponents can't cast spells with the chosen card name. So this would be particularly powerful in a pod where you like know what your opponent's decks do and you could just be like, oh, mm-hmm. I know that Andy's playing Noyandar. I'm going to comply and I'm going to name View from above. Get it.
that does in fact do that.
No, it'd only be for one turn, but it is one turn where hopefully you can, you know, make it so someone, maybe they can't cast their commander for one turn. I don't think comply would feel as bad as someone throwing down like a Nevermore or something like that and naming your commander.
Yeah.
So no. Just a one little off protection for yourself, and you get to draw a card when you cast it.
You know that somebody has a counterspell in their hand, you force it. If you comply True. And you say that they can't cast counterspell, then they have to counter that if they want to play something else, or they don't, and then you know that you're safe at least from one single counterspell.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's interesting. So now that we have all, you know, it's funny to see how many mechanics that we actually have that work with Vega, because when you're first looking at it, it's like, okay, you know, foretell, and then you go, oh, okay, flashback, okay, escape, cascade, jumpstart, retreat. You know, we found all of these, and there's probably certainly more, and there will be more, obviously, in the future. There's going to be more mechanics that, you know, are likely going to synergize with not casting from your hand. Mm-hmm. Let's double down, right, and try to benefit from utilizing these cards, right? So you've got cards that just inherently work well with Vega because you can cast them from other places or just gain more benefits by milling or drawing into other cards.
Yeah. So the big ones that people are building Vega around, there's actually two enchantments and a creature that kind of do very similar things. So you have, first off, Future Sight. So Future Sight is an enchantment for two blue. It says play with the top card of your library revealed. You may play the top card of your library. So obviously the top of your library is not part of your hand. You do have to play with it revealed. So your opponents are going to know what that card is on the top of your library. So it gives them a little bit of info, but every time you cast that card on the top of your library, you're going to be able to draw a card. They are going to get to see what that card is that you draw as well, though, because of Future Sight. I think it's too good of a synergistic thing to ignore. You're going to have to play Future Sight in this Vega deck. I think it's absolutely the number one staple for Vega. It allows it so you could, you know, cast your jumpstart card from the top of your library, then cast it from your hand, then cast it from your graveyard. And it's going to just be too good not to play. And we have a creature, Magus of the Future, which is going to give you the exact same condition, but it's on a creature instead. So it'll be easier to remove, but we're going to add it in for redundancy sakes. So for two blue, you get a 2/3 human wizard that has the exact same text as Future Sight. The other enchantment I was talking about was Precognition Field from Dominaria. So for 3 and a blue, it's an enchantment that says you may look at the top card of your library, and then you may cast the top card of your library if it's an instant or a sorcery card. So we are playing mostly instants and sorceries in Vega, so this card is going to be more beneficial more of the time than it would be less of the time. But again, you can't play lands with it, you can't play artifacts with it or anything like that, so it's a little bit more situational, but in this particular build, it's going to be strong.
Yeah, and you've got a really interesting sorcery here that we still haven't seen resolved from Commander Legends, one of the nine CMC sorcery spells, Mnemonic Deluge. So exile target instant or sorcery from a graveyard, copy it 3 times, and you may cast those copies without paying their mana costs. So that's cool because you can get something of yours, you know, again with that graveyard synergy, or perhaps just grab something bananas from someone else's graveyard and cast it 3 times and draw 3 cards, or 3 cards from Vega.
That's right. And And speaking of which, you said opponent's graveyard. So Diluvian Primordial is going to be an enter the battlefield effect that's going to be able to exile an instant or sorcery from an opponent's graveyard. And then you can cast actually from all of your opponent's graveyards. So that's another one of those. That's one of those enter the battlefield creatures I was referring to earlier that maybe we could take advantage of some of the blink effects that we get. And then the other creature with the enter the battlefield effect I was referring to before was Torrential Gearhulk, which is our Snapcaster Mage, basically from Kaldheim. That's also going to allow us to draw an extra card here and there. So I know we haven't mentioned many creatures so far, and I think that is one of the downsides of this deck is it's not very creature based, and in a creature based meta, we're not going to have much to block, and it's something that we're going to have to work around.
Welcome to my world.
Yes. Yeah.
You just play bounce spells and you do irritating other things that people will, you know, not care so much about you not having creatures to block. So a couple of cards I noticed that you don't have in here. One of them, you know, curious to know if you would be interested in running would be Uba Mask. So this is an artifact that says if a player would draw a card, they remove that card from the game face up instead, and then each player may play cards they revealed from the game with Uba Mask this turn. So that would be being cast from exile, but it's not on the list. Is there any reason why?
Yeah, I like having cards in my hand for one. I like being able to pass the turn with like 20 cards in my hand, and Uba Mask not going to let me do that. On top of the fact that if you were to draw cards on someone else's turn, if it's not an instant, it's exiled forever and there's no way you can get it back. So that's the reason I don't like Uba Mask for myself, on top of it being a feel bad for other people who are drawing cards on other people's turns. So
yeah, no, totally fair. And then another card that is not so nasty when it's not in a Lavinia Azorius Renegade deck, but the card is Knowledge Pool. So it's an artifact with imprint. When Knowledge Pool enters the battlefield, each player exiles the top three cards of their library. And then when a player casts a spell from their hand, instead they exile it, and if they do, they cast a card that's in the Knowledge Pool bunch of cards without paying its mana cost. Is it a little too chaosy for you and you don't want anyone to potentially have the value of your cards?
Honestly, looking at my cards, I'm not really sure other people can really take advantage of them that much.
Right. No, I agree.
But I think mostly it's webcam magic that's keeping me from playing Knowledge Pool at this point.
But you would probably play it if we played some in-person games, you know, in the future.
It would be worth at least trying it out and seeing if I like it. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And then the other item that I have here before we move on to the win con section and how we're gonna wrap up games with this is you know, taking a look at how your deck was specifically built. Is it worth playing cards that do have Storm because you do have quite a bit of, you know, cantrippy type deals here? Although you're not making infinite mana or anything that's going to benefit from that, is it something you did consider?
Yeah, Storm is definitely a way that you can definitely build this deck. There's a lot of people that I have seen their lists online that are building it Storm with all of these cantrips. I'm trying to look up the sorcery.
Like a Mind's Desire? Is that, you know, yes. Is that something you're interested in here? Is like a Mind's Desire?
It's just it takes a long time to resolve a Mind's Desire and you don't necessarily win. I tried playing my Jorien deck with a Mind's Desire win condition and I found it to be unreliable with the way that I built it and a card that I just don't really want to throw in a list at this point. And that's just personal flavor.
You're right. So Coil, how do we bring this to the field goal? Nope. End zone?
How do we
get a touchdown?
How are we getting our touchdowns and scoring more points than our opponent at the
end
of the
game? Get the goal points.
So definitely an Azorius win condition that came out in Amonkhet that a lot of people will run is Approach of the Second Sun. And I would be a fool if I didn't run Approach of the Second Sun as a win condition in this deck. For any deck that draws cards, getting your Approach of the Second Sun, which is 7 CMC sorcery, it says when you cast a spell, if it is the second time you've cast this card from your hand, you win the game. Otherwise you gain 7 life and put this card 7th from the top of your library. I did that from memory. I'm pretty sure that's right, though. Any deck where you are drawing extra cards on your turn and you can get to that 7th card on top of your library faster and you have the mana to cast it, you should probably be playing Approach of the Second Sun.
Yeah.
So for sure, that's going to be one of the win conditions that we're going to throw in this thing.
And so you talked about tokens, right? So you got a go-wide strategy with a couple of cards that are going to make tokens when you cast your spells.
Yep. So yeah, Monastery Mentor is the really, really good one. Talaran Sky Summoner to get 2/2 flyers, Murmuring Mystic to get some 1/1 flyers. Those are definitely going to be thrown in there. More so, you know, go-wide strategies as well as blockers. Because again, we play in a very creature-heavy meta.
We do. So now if we don't go with that, you've got some other routes that you could build this. You wanted to test out perhaps Vega and a couple of different routes, and you wanted to start with this kind of alternate win con with the token strategy first. But you do have listed here that you could win through like Laboratory Maniac lines, which is way more of the self mill.
Yeah, self mill, storm, draw a card, draw your entire deck type of deal. Not a strategy that I'm particularly looking at building for here, which is why I didn't include those. And I know a like Psychosis Crawler being every time you draw a card, you get to ping for one. I'm not really looking to, do a windfall when I have 30 cards in my hand. Windfall actually doesn't even show up in the deck list in order to make Psychosis Crawler like a one-time win. So it would only be pinging. Right. I'm not really sure it's worth it. And then another blue strategy that I run in some of my other decks is mill, utilizing enchantments like Sphinx's Tutelage. And again, you mentioned it before, that it just kind of annoys people more than it does actually gets there, unless you're drawing 30 cards in one turn.
Right. And you know, the other one that is just an incremental card that it just does a lot of work you've got here is a Psychosis Crawler. I would not be surprised if when we play this on Thursday that you don't draw at least like 10 cards in a game.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Psychosis Crawler is going to deal 10 damage to each opponent. Worth running.
Yeah. So probably going to be in the 99. I don't know if there's any other cards in blue-white that I can play that does what Psychosis Crawler does. Typically, those are in like Izzet colors, like your Niv-Mizzets and stuff like that. So maybe the one-off will be worth it. Maybe it won't. I don't know. And we'll find out. That's how we have to tune our decks, is we have to play them and we have to find out what works and what doesn't.
Yeah. And well, I think this is going to be a very fun deck. Tune in this week, Thursday, to see Coil run this. We will have the deck list posted on our YouTube channel after we do stream this coming Thursday. And if you have any questions, you want to see it early, feel free to reach out to us directly and we can get you the deck list. But I think that's the end of our show this week. We want to thank you all for listening. If you want to contact us, you can find our podcast online at guardianprojectpodcast.com. You can find our social media on Twitter at GuardianPod and our gameplay videos on YouTube at youtube.com/TheGuardianProject. And you can email us at guardianprojectpod@gmail.com. I'm on Twitter at @ATFlory.
And I'm on Twitter at @WormcoilEngine. And we want to give a special thanks to Ryan Nichols, our producer and editor, and Chris Wolf, who handles all of our graphic design. So special thanks to both of you. Appreciate all the work that you do with us.
We will see you all in 1 week's time.
1 week. Suspend for 7 days.
But I don't have a way to remove the counters.
Oh, perfect.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.